I suppose I think the context is important, and I think it'd be, naive for us to think that this is anything like an isolated event or even really something that's new to the political scene in Australia. Some people I spoke to yesterday were shocked at the number of people that the far right are able to mobilize around this issue somewhere like Perth. Some people think, this is something that's just isolated to, for example, the United States or the UK, where there are actually quite large anti-LGBTI and anti-trans, anti-drag movements that are growing, and particularly in the US, winning quite significant victories in some states as well. Of course, places where they're actually repealing very basic rights to dress in certain ways, as if people wearing certain items of clothing equates to drag, which then equates to some sort of grooming or whatever they argue. And obviously as well, like more significant kind of healthcare restrictions on trans people in some places. People up to the age of 21, 22, 23 won't be able to access hormone replacement therapies, very hard fought rights that procedures and things that people have been able to access for a long time and have fought for and are being stripped away. And I think in the Australian context, we have had a growing far right in the last few years. If you think about the anti-vax movements around COVID, very large street mobilizations of, quite explicitly very reactionary, very conservative groups, Proud Boys, the United Australia Party, One Nation, these sorts of people. And I think they, in the wake of the COVID stuff, see a potential campaign in attacking LGBTI people, and particularly I think weaponizing some of this sort of movement around particularly I think trans people. So I think that's kind of some of the context behind why these sorts of groups are targeting drag story hours in Australia. I don't think it's actually particularly an aversion to storybooks or to even necessarily drag on its own. Drag is not always necessarily actually just an LGBTI thing. It's also obviously has a long, centuries-long history in just sort of theater and pantomime, and I'm not sure that's necessarily what they're targeting. I think it's quite explicitly our communities that they see an enemy in and see something that they can actually recruit around, grow out of, and campaign around. And I think that's extremely dangerous, and has the potential to grow here in the way that it has grown overseas. So in my view, that was part of what we needed to do in launching a community response. It was obviously partially about ensuring the safety of the attendees, making the children feel welcome, making the library staff feel, safe and supported and protected, that, Mayland supports this event and supports the library. I live in the area and that was important to me. But I think we also needed to combat the far right, outnumber them, and prove that, we have the majority support, and that we're not going to allow these sorts of groups to make LGBTI people feel that they're not welcome in their own communities.
It was very apt in what you said before. Some of the pickets that came from this far right furore did explicitly have stop confusing children, and it had two little animations or cartoons, which were confusing on their own because they had very strong gender stereotypes. There was a little triangle which indicates a dress with piggy tails, and then on the other side it had a little square and then two smaller squares with the stick legs and a short haircut. But that's all it said. When I first walked in, I walked in obviously from is it 8th Road side, and I thought I was like, oh, only three people here, and then saw the other side. It was growing. You had everyone link arms to create like a barricade, even though police had their little danger tape everywhere to divide people. Behind that, oh, I know you're obviously coordinating the speakers, but behind that, what else was going on?
Well, it was an interesting sort of slightly more complex protests maybe than your ordinary march might be, because you obviously have to balance, like you say, some of these factors. There's obviously the far right crowd themselves, and obviously you have concerns in the lead up. How many people are we going to be able to mobilize, and how many people are they going to mobilize? And that, that's the concern. And I know a lot of people in the lead up were worried about that, and potentially, that can some more concerned people can be obviously averse from attending over safety concerns, and I definitely understand that. My view is the best way to combat that is to get as many people there as possible. It's, you know, strengthen numbers. And what happened on the day, I arrived quite early to help set up. We had obviously significant sort of sound equipment and banners and, you know, all of the stuff you have to bring to this sort of event to organize. So I was there from 10 a.m. And already there were a few isolated sort of far right individuals wandering around, people I actually recognized, you know, even before they brought the signs out and stuff, that I had seen at for example, the counter protests we had against the Posey Parker speaking tour here in Perth, Freedom Media WA, pack of lunatic kind of anti-vax, supposedly independent media people, you know, they were wandering around quite early, I imagine fishing for, you know, interviews and content and that sort of thing. We ignored them, of course, and quite quickly, you know, captured the space. I mean, even like 40 minutes before our advertised start time, we outnumbered them. So, you know, people just kept arriving wave after wave. I think every train, you know, that came past would get another kind of couple dozen people. And by 11, I mean, we had significantly outnumbered them. I don't want to dismiss. I actually do think it is concerning the number of people that they were able to get on their side. I think at maximum, probably like between 50, maybe 80 people is a little bit hard to say. But that is, I mean, that's bad. You know, I think it's, you know, not every issue that the far right is able to mobilize that many people that quickly. And, you know, a lot of that is happening on sort of underground channels, Telegram and that sort of thing. And it can be hard to get a sense in the lead up, you know, how many people they're going to be able to get out. The anti-vax stuff really shocked me. I mean, they were able to get thousands of people to come out, you know, with this sort of conspiracy nonsense. So it's always a concern. But I think what we proved really is that they are in the minority. And most people, you know, aren't really susceptible to this kind of stupid argument about gender. And like you say, I think most people realize that things are much less binary than that and are quite accepting of that. And, you know, I think are quite shocked to hear that, you know, actually Nazis are, you know, gathering in their suburb and trying to sort of spread this kind of message. So I was actually quite confident we were going to outnumber them, and I was really pleased that we did.
So how did you initially find out that this was going to happen, that they were going to mobilize and picket the drag story hour at Maylands?
So they put a Facebook event up, the far right did, for their event, and that someone got wind of that and sent me a Facebook message. And within an hour, we put up a public event in opposition. So that was quite conscious, was to do it really quickly. Like, we wanted to get ahead of things. There are other strategies and other suggestions that, you know, different groups can have to deal with this sort of thing. And my concern was that the council might cancel the event under pressure. So we wanted to get out really quickly, quite a public message that, you know, there are supporters, that people do support the event and support the families. And the library staff as well had been calling on the community for support, to be sending emails into the council talking about, you know, what their view was on the event. And we wanted to, you know, echo that louder and more publicly and really get that message across. So yeah, that was quite conscious. We wanted to call the rally really quickly. And then of course, just had to, I mean, we had about 7 days to build it. So, a lot of the work was just put into getting, in touch with as many people as possible. People from, of course, Rabble Books, who put a lot of effort into responding, some of the event organizers, the council themselves, a little bit more difficult to get in touch with. I understand, of course, that they've got safety concerns there. So, you know, we just had to kind of do what we could in the time that we had to, like I say, get as many people out as possible. But that really was the strategy that at least that we had at Rainbow Rebellion at trying to put the thing together, was just to get a public call out, get as many people there on the ground as possible, just to make it feel as safe as we could. And, you know, obviously with an eye to if there had been children going in, you know, and seeing the far right, we wanted to, you know, show them that there was, you know, different views and that we did support them.
There were children there. Like, I was there with my younger child, and there were other people. Yeah. Their children. And I guess at first it was overwhelming, but then you could hear the conversations with the parents and peers around the young, like, folk that were there, to see the other side, or the far right, more so speaking nonsense, because the reality in which they live in was face painting and dancing and solidarity and color and dogs in costumes, versus the other side where they were saying save our children while smoking. It's a bit counterintuitive. Is this something that you feel you're going to have to do every time, and are willing to do every time this goes ahead, or do you feel there was some success in yesterday's counter rally?
I feel that there was definitely a success in pretty much every metric we could have viewed it in. I think the public messaging, the number of people, all of that, I think it was a great success. And my hope in that is that we've set a precedent in some way. You know, there have been lots of these events around the country that have been that have been protested or had hate campaigns and hate speech and stuff about, particularly in Melbourne in the last few months. And a lot of them, most of them, have just been cancelled or pushed online. And I think that alone, that in and of itself sets a bad precedent, you know, that councils should be, you know, just collapse under pressure from this kind of fringe minority. And I think it's this real shame, you know, if we end up in a situation where it's effectively banned to have LGBTI events at public libraries or at you know, on council spaces. So you know, I think what we wanted to do was not just this one day, but we wanted to set a bit of a precedent that when the far right try to protest these things, the left will mobilize to defend them, and that the LGBTI community, you know, is strong and proud, and you know, not, you know, just, you know, kind of snowflakes that are gonna collapse under pressure or need to hide away from these things. I don't think people need to. You know, I think we proved in the equal marriage campaign that the majority of this country support LGBTI people, support, you know, equal rights in some sense. And that's something we want to keep building on.
I think it's also important to remember that even though these events do kind of fall under LGBTIQ plus umbrella, they're also a really important and inclusive resource and space for allies and just young youth. Mm. To be around the queer community and inform themselves and understand that it's normality and that it's not an event that is exclusively to persuade children to have any kind of gender identity or
of course
identity, that it is genuinely just a beautiful space to amalgamate all humans.
Absolutely. I think it is an important point you've made to highlight that there is a difference, and that mostly the reason I was putting that emphasis on defending LGBTI people is that I think, you know, it, like I said earlier, it is more about that for the far right, I think, than just attacking drag events or storybooks. But the two are obviously connected. And of course, the events themselves are wonderful and should just be defended on their own merit. Like, you know, I'm sure any child, you know, gay, straight, cis, trans, or, you know, just too young to know, like, would get a lot out of reading a, you know, book about inclusivity or diversity and learning a little bit about the world. Like, there's nothing subversive or, you know, wrong with that. And I think that's important that we get that across as well.
Entirely. And there's absolutely no grounds for anyone on the left to be placating these horrible, horrible people.
Yeah.
But as I said before, these are for everyone. So that means that allies can get involved and show solidarity with the people within the community. So how can people get involved in like Rainbow Rebellion and find out information to participate in more of these things? Because I know that Rebel Books did a huge, they put a huge amount of effort on Instagram. So what are the best ways for people to get involved and find out when things are happening and when you need support?
Yeah, well, our biggest reach at the moment is definitely on Facebook. Not really by choice, but just sort of it's a historical thing. We've had the same, you know, page that we've been running for these sorts of events for over a decade. So that definitely has the biggest reach. It's how we get the word out quite quickly. So of course, people should follow the Facebook page there. It's Rainbow Rebellion WA. We'll put up any events and sort of, yeah, posts and stuff about what's coming up in the future there as soon as we can. We've also just launched an Instagram a little bit late to the party with that one for this, but it's at rainbow.rebellion.wa. So people can follow that as well if you're more of an Instagram user. And of course, if you want to get more involved, I'd say the best thing to do would be to message the page or potentially send in your email address. We can add you to our mailing list as well. But I'd say get in touch over social media if you can. At the moment, that's sort of the best, kind of infrastructure we have here. And of course, in person as well, we actually have been involved with lots of groups just on the ground doing campaign stalls around this, particularly like socialist organizations at some of the universities and the pride departments at universities. So if people are on campus, if you're a student, there's definitely people on the ground doing, you know, stalls, leafleting, trying to get the word out about these sorts of events. And of course, other issues as well. You know, it's not just trans rights and LGBTI rights we want to organize around. So there's definitely lots going on. So yeah, I'd say get in touch with the Facebook page, get in touch with us on Instagram, and yeah, come see us at any public events we have.